This is where our listeners are if we have.
Okay, so we are currently recording, and I'm going to switch over to Spotify.
Oh, shit. Dude.
I'm going to let it play out a bit longer because it's so good.
Yeah.
Ahoy! Welcome aboard Captain Colin's Radio Voyage. Actually, Radio Voyage, I keep doing that. I'm Captain Collins. Joining me today, feeling sick after his vaccination, is Mr. Jake Moody. How's it going, Jake?
Hello.
First mate Moody.
Darren it out. There you go. Darren it out right now, but
how would you rate the Moderna experience?
Well, I've been able to take 2 days off of work, which was nice, just hang out. But other than that, the first shot affected me and the second one super affected me. But I mean, hell, we're getting pretty close back to normal. So go get your shot if you haven't.
Yeah, that's sick. You're going to be able to like go to a bar and not wear a mask in like 2 days.
Yeah, dude, we're getting pretty close to it. Yeah, it's crazy.
But so we have to weekend after I get my shot, we got to go to Trader Sam's.
100%. Yeah. When is your second one?
I think I'm like May 6th or something, which is okay, like damn. A week and a
it's
half.
It's like next
only.
Weekend.
Really close. Yeah.
Dope. We should definitely do that.
Exciting ass shit. Now, Jake, are you drinking like coffee or any beverage of any sort?
Water.
Water? Okay, I need to put us in the slideshow mode. That's it, okay. Welcome to Jake's Cafe. Tell us about your water.
Water's all right. I guess I don't have any fun fact on it, but so many people at work told me that to drink Gatorade before getting the second shot, and I'm sure being hydrated can't hurt when you're, like, you know, getting a shot like this, but the lady at the pharmacy told me the same thing. Get Gatorade or what is it called? The thing people drink like after they had a day of drinking. Pedialyte.
Oh, right.
So I'm drinking water at the moment. But for you and for whenever everybody else gets their vax, be hydrated. Get some Gatorade, I guess.
Yeah. There's this Japanese shit that's like Gatorade except way better. I have that like on a daily basis. I run to the Daiso and grab it because
really,
it's great. It gets you hydrated, you know.
Is there a Daiso by you?
So close, walking distance.
Oh, what?
Yeah,
is it new?
Not what it's been there since I moved in. I'll just walk over there sometimes. It's great. It's like I'm in Japan again.
Daiso. So in I think it's in Torrance, which is basically inland Redondo. Is a big Daiso. And then right next door is like a grocery market called Tokyo Central. And those are the stores I wanted to bring you to and ask how authentic they are.
Yeah.
Because they seem dope to me. I've been to both.
They're probably pretty authentic. Like you can't obviously like get the real deal outside of Japan, but like pretty close, you know, like Tokyo Town. That's a dope area. Have you been there?
Yeah, totally. I've been to the like conveyor belt sushi in Tokyo.
Yeah.
LA.
Yeah, that's the one. That whole area. They got like a really cool underground mall there and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've walked around down there before too.
Yeah. I'm gonna open my window really fast because my room's getting stuffy.
Do it. I like that tucked in shirt look.
Oh man, yeah. I guess I kinda just did it like a little while ago. I was reading the Suicide Squad comic, and I thought the Peacemaker's fit was sick, and I was like kind of wearing it, except it wasn't tucked in. So I just made that final call. It shows
that's
off
cool.
The belt. Hey, that's the logic.
Totally. Did you see Fandom 2 was announced today?
Oh fuck, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Cool. It's happening in October. I don't know what they're teasing, but there's gonna be another Fandom.
So on a scale, right, like how excited are you for the Suicide Squad?
Very excited.
Me
I
too.
Would
Me
if
too.
It was any if there was any other director, obviously I would see it regardless. But having it be a James Gunn movie, like, I'm actually excited about it. Where if it was just a normal Suicide Squad movie, you know, I'd be excited like when I saw Wonder Woman 84 and it ended up sucking. But, like, I was still excited for it. But this one, I'm, like, gonna gear the weekend around. I'm super excited for Suicide Squad.
I went to see, I went to the movies yesterday. I went to see that, that Demon Slayer anime movie. But
I saw you review it.
Yeah, it was in the XD theater I was in, so like the nice one, and they played the Suicide Squad trailer. It's gonna be so fucking cool. I'm so excited for that movie.
How was your theater experience? Were there many people there?
I went twice this week, actually.
Oh wow.
Because it's like the first time that a movie's released, so like I don't think I can watch it at home. I think I can only go see it in theaters. And so I watched it once on my own, then a friend wanted to see it, so I went back and saw it again. I'm half vaccinated, wore a mask the whole time, just in case.
You're fine.
I don't want to be on the wrong side of history. But at the same time, it was sick. It was great. Like I had to book my tickets in advance because they have more limited capacity right now. So like, and Weebs love these movies. So like they book out the theater like a week in advance. So you have to either go to like a matinee showing or else book like several days in advance. But it was cool. It was cool. It was good. I'm excited for movies to come back.
Yeah, me too. I guess the first movie we'll see is Black Widow. For me, nothing's pushing me to the theater just yet. But
yeah, Mortal Kombat.
I'm excited for it. Did you see Mortal Kombat in theaters?
I couldn't care. I couldn't care enough. It's not great. I saw it and it was like, it's fun. It's entertaining. I'm really glad I was at home and high while watching it.
Right.
Because I just would not have given a shit in the movie theater. I'm just not that big of a Mortal Kombat fan either. So not that I'm not a fan, but I just don't know the characters and stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm really looking forward to it though. I mean, we'll have to see. It got bad reviews. You saw it, but I do really want to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it's entertaining. Just be high. That's the answer. Yeah. Or be high or be drunk or be on a substance of some sort.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Anyway, let's talk about Boom. Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Do you want to just hit us with like just go on a monologue and give all your thoughts, Jake, and I'll scroll around in the PowerPoint to match up with what you're saying.
I was gonna ask you if you have any structure to it or not, but I guess, like I said in Letterboxd, I had the opposite experience that I had with WandaVision. Watching the first, like being able to binge the first like two episodes or three episodes or whatever came out with WandaVision, and like all the way up until like two episodes before the finale, like I was very engaged and there was like lots of mysteries that I cared about and I was like emotionally involved. Like I cared about the kids and I'd watch it like either at midnight on Thursday or like that would be what I'm doing on Friday, whatever it is. And then it ended with like, you know, a big laser fight and then the boner joke. And then it just like fizzled out for me, which I think is a lot of people felt.
That was me as well. Yeah.
Yep. With Falcon Winter Soldier, I had the exact opposite thing. There were like bits and pieces in the beginning and in the middle of the season that like definitely gripped me. That episode that I don't think it was the one that we watched together, but there were, I guess it was when the Dora Milaje showed up. I was into some of the Zemo things, but it was like bits and pieces that I found interesting. As a whole, it didn't get me there. And then it like full swing 100% in the last episode. Got me, man. I really cared about John Walker's arc by the end. I know we'll get to it, but you said it felt somewhat rushed when he flipped to being like an anti-hero good guy type. I was all for it just because I really liked the grounded take of him. I loved the speech at the end. It felt heavy-handed enough, but the thing about it is I think there's a fine line to walk if you're a big movie studio or like a big actor or whatever it is in terms of like being woke for the sake of that's what's popular right now versus actually doing something. And I understand that it's Marvel and it's colorful and funny and if you're going to make any type of stance on like activism, I guess these are the characters to do it with, and this is the way too. But there was just like a lot of symbolism that really hit me. The Isaiah statue like really felt special. It just felt great. A lot of it, man, I don't know. It just really worked by the end. And then also retrospectively, if we're gonna take that like missing plot line video for as truth, which is the original episodes revolved around something like a pandemic and they had to cut it out due to current events, then that would 100% explain why I wasn't as invested in the beginning. And that makes it a great show. Honestly, it really did. So
I think really, really fast, right? Just to cut in one of the points you made there, right? This is like a really, really old school, like Stan Lee back in the day when he was making his comics, right? I'm just gonna read off the quote because I think it's very relevant to what you were saying about like the monologue and stuff at the end, where he says, so this is the quote: "Many of you unsung heroes have written to ask how we really feel about our own magazines. You've inquired whether we take them seriously or just treat them as a patently pointless put-on. Well, just for the record, Charlie, we believe in our swinging superheroes. We created them, we live up to their adventures." Oh wait, is this? Oh yeah, this is the right one. Okay. He's done a few of these, but this, I haven't read this one before, but it's like the same idea though. "We created them, we live up to their adventures, their hang-ups, almost 24 hours a day. We know them as well as we know our families and better than we know Irving Forbush." I don't know who that is. "No literature lover, our fearless little fables are not put-ons. To us, they're what happened. They're what's happening, baby. It's the real world we have our doubts about, but that's another story. Till next month, face front, that's where the action is." Not the quote I wanted to use, but he's done a few of these, right? And it's like...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
He basically says that, like... There's one of them where some reader wrote in and was like, "Can you bring politics out of comic books, right?" And he was like, "Politics are comic books. Like, they make the joke in Deadpool 2 that X-Men is a dated metaphor for the civil rights movement of the 60s. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. true, you know, because Stan Lee, who created all these characters, like, he wanted to put a real kind of message behind these characters and stuff. And they really mean something. And it's also adaptation to a degree, where it's like, you can look at Disney and you can look at Marvel Studios and say like they own Hollywood because they basically do at this point. But, and you can say like, oh, it doesn't mean anything coming from them, right? But what they're really doing is adapting comic books, which like is not really that corporatized, which is why I like it. It is owned by Marvel and DC, but they don't sell. They only mm-hmm. keep them alive because of the creativity and the ideas that can be adapted into movies then. But like comics as an industry are not really profitable anymore. So really creators are able to just go off and do whatever they want. And like the Sam Wilson comic book is just from issue one, like very, very, very much like that. And he only became Captain America very recently in the comics, but yeah, that's been like a defining part of his character, is that he got a lot of hate when he first showed up, like in 2017, I think was mm-hmm. when it happened, maybe 16. But like online people were like, they gotta make comics all like progressive now. We gotta have Black Captain America. And at the time, people were complaining because of Kamala Khan as Ms. Marvel too, like Muslim Ms. Marvel, mm-hmm. and Lady mm-hmm. Thor was in the Avengers. So people were like, "Oh, this is stupid." But like, a few years goes on, you kind of realize, like, I'll hold this up for you to the camera, right? But no one else can see what I'm holding up. I'm holding up my original action figure from when I was a kid of John Stewart Green Lantern, right? And like, I'm white, right? That's one thing to preface, because in case there's any listeners out there who haven't met me in person, I'm sure you can tell at this point I'm white, right? But at the same time, like when I was watching the Justice League cartoon as a kid, which was like such a forming thing for me, John Stewart was my favorite above and beyond. Green Lantern was my boy. I like brought that action figure with me everywhere I went. I loved it, right? I one of my cousins remembers me like playing games with her with my Green Lantern figure. And I asked my aunt one year for a Green Lantern action figure and she couldn't find it. And she sent me Darkseid and I was all pissed off because that's all she could find. But like, I didn't see him as like a black superhero or like anything like that, you know? I just saw him as a superhero, you know? And mm-hmm. like, that's powerful. And like, I'm white, right? But if I was for black kids, you know? It's like Black Panther kind of started with that, right? In a way. But like, what's cool now, I feel like, is before Hollywood was kind of censoring those messages that creators wanted to make. And now the political climate is at a place where if they censor it, they get in trouble. So it's less that they're trying to appeal to wokeism to sell, but more that they're now not able to restrict that kind of stuff anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's a nice way of looking at it. That definitely is. Yeah, I see that. I think specifically about this show, though, one of the things in the early episodes that like really got, that was like really thought-provoking to me was, I think it was Zemo, pretty sure it was Zemo, chatting about the super soldier serum. And he was like, basically, why is it Captain America? Like, in a vacuum, he's no different than Red Skull. You just agree with him and not the other. So at a certain point, I got the feeling that the show was about icons. That's how I tried to describe it to Didi. Like, it's about like, why do we put meaning behind like, I don't know, visuals, theming. And like, that was that scene where John Walker decapitated the guy, because you're seeing the red, white, and blue. The whole world is watching. Like, there's no difference between him and anybody else. The politicians at the end calling the flag smashers, which, by the way, again, I never was behind them. I wasn't intimidated by them. I wasn't
really fast. Look at his design. Look at his design in the comics. That was flag smasher in the comics. Like,
yeah,
they just turned them into bland mercenary characters, essentially.
Yeah. Yes, they did 100%.
But, and I think that's one thing that I'll say about the show is that, I mean, for me, it was very, very similar to WandaVision. And I can see it becoming a pattern for Marvel TV that I hope they break. But I feel like in all of these roles, the actors are absolutely killing it. And they're able to, like, put emotional investment into their characters and really, like, spruce it up. And I feel like the scripts they're shooting with, or the scripts they originally signed on to the project with, they're like changing them over time, you know? Like, there's no way Evan Peters would have signed up for that role if he knew about the Ralph Boehner thing. They probably got him, and then they changed it, you know? And then he was already on the contract, so he just had to do the best with what he was given.
Yeah,
In the same way with Mr. John Walker, which is, like, me too. That was for at least the first half of the season. Before, like, the last two episodes, they did a really good job with Falcon. But prior to that, like, my through line, the thing I cared about week after week, was John Walker. And the amount of screen time he had in an episode, that was clearly, like, what differentiated the episodes I liked from the episodes I didn't like. Because that first scene, and we played a bit of the music from it at the beginning, where, like, I was saying this to Jake privately, but just on the podcast, right, that, like, what a great way to set up your, like, super privileged white guy antagonist, right? Who's like, he's been doing what he's been ordered to this whole time, essentially, and he's done his job well, but it's like there's no reflection into why he's doing what he's doing, right? So in a way, he's a bad guy, but he's just flawed, you know? He's an anti-hero. And the way they introduce him is they show him at his most anxious. They show him right before he's about to go on stage, and he's practicing his monologue to himself, and he is not the virtue of confidence. So then for the rest of the show, when you see him interacting with other people, you know that he's a really scared child hiding behind the visage of a war hero, you know? And especially when it comes to the shield and stuff, which is not, that's not something he's earned, you know? Like they say to him, have you ever jumped on top of a grenade? And his answer is, yeah, we do it in training all the time. There's a maneuver I do with the shield. You know? And it's just like a very matter of fact way of answering a question that was meant more existentially, you know, like, would you lay your life down on the line for the other guy? And I thought, I loved his character. Like, I loved it. And Wyatt Russell, God bless him. Like, he killed it. He killed that role. I just feel like in the last episode, like, I feel like he got fucked. He got super fucked over, because they set up his character a certain way. And, like, people who kind of watch Marvel for, like, mindless action or to gawk at the hot guys or whatever, right? And a guy like John Walker comes on, and they're like, what is this? And, in fact, they hate him because they have such loyalty to the Captain America character, and they haven't read the comics or have any awareness of the comics. And so it's just like, why is this guy in the show? Because it's like, they think that he's supposed to be likable and the show is failing. But it's actually such a great success that he was as hated as he was early on. And then in an interview at that point, someone was talking to him and they were like, oh, so like, are you going to team up with this person, that person? And he was like, just wait till the end of the show, right? But I hate it because I love the character. And like, they had the opportunity to really close his arc in a great way, you know, and have a moment of reconciliation where he realizes that either he realizes he doesn't deserve any of this, or like he does with continuing on with the Shield, he comes to that moment of realization and then he makes the wrong decision basically. And he chooses to, instead of doing what's right, he chooses to do what's right by him, you know?
Right. Well, finish your thought.
Well, I was going to say the same thing. I was going to say they have it for like a split second. But it's hardly even a moment. And prior to that moment, he's kind of budding up and teaming up already with Sam and Bucky, right? And there's kind of, it's like, oh, John's cool now. And then there's a moment of like, oh no, what should I do? But like, does he not have the super soldier serum running through him anymore? Does he not have those like ego things? Even if you had a moment where it was kind of touching on the idea of like substance abuse and like alcoholism or that kind of thing, because you definitely could address those themes and topics with a guy like him, right? Like he's a very like kind of Republican archetype, really, you know? Mm-hmm. And you could have had something where it's like he's doing the serum and it's fucking with his head. He doesn't know it's fucking with his head, and he's of the belief that he's right and everybody else is wrong. And you could have a moment where somebody says to him, like, John, this isn't you. The things are taking you over. And there kind of is that in the second to last episode. But then at the end of that episode, he just makes the Shield. And then there's like halfway through the last episode, they're just fighting in New York. And John shows up and he's like, hey, yo, what's up, guys? And they're like, oh, what's up, John? He gets his ass beat. And then they're like, here, come help us fight the villain. And then he fights the villain. Then he just kind of like disappears into the background. And then he puts on the costume, which is a great scene. But I feel like there's so much that was cut there. I think they fucked him over in the editing room.
They probably did. And if we're being honest, when you were talking about, like, it feels like they kind of change up these screenplays and, like, stories after they signed these people on. I have no doubt that they added, edited, or changed bits and pieces of, like, the final couple episodes based on, like, all the BLM events over the summer. I am sure 100% that they changed things around. So maybe John Walker got the shorter ends of the stick on that one to keep the runtime down, specifically in the finale. But
like, why keep the runtime down? We want longer runtimes.
Yeah, fair enough. And if you're going to make a TV show, why?
Yeah. That's the beauty of streaming. You don't have to limit it.
Yeah, totally. But at least the way I watched it, it wasn't as cut and dry, because when he showed up in the finale and he starts fighting the Flag Smashers really brutally, it was still, at least me, I was watching it, like I was still on the edge of my seat because I didn't know exactly what his intentions are. Like I was watching that like two villains fighting each other. And there was a part like where the car was burning and all the people were inside, but he was still fighting Carly to show that he cared. He was still being going off of selfish motives than like being a superhero. But then he does end up doing it in the end. And we're in the MCU, dude. This guy's got like probably tons and tons of more screen time where they can address all those things that in the next show or movie that he's in, if they just introduce him as like still being bad, like I figure US Agent and that new, By the way, I don't know what her name is. The actress who's in Friends, I think, who's now like in MCU now.
No, she's in Seinfeld. Julia,
she's in Seinfeld, right.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah. So apparently, I don't think this is a spoiler, but apparently she's in Black Widow. That was supposed to be her introduction. And they're calling her like more of an evil Nick Fury. Like she kind of brings together like the heroes, but like has sinister motives behind it, which is going to be great.
Dark Avengers.
Exactly. So I'm sure, dude, the next time we see him, they're going to lean into the, like... They're going to lean back into all that stuff.
I would love it if Captain America 4 is Sam Wilson versus the Dark Avengers.
Oh, it'd be so cool.
That'd be so cool, wouldn't that? Or the Thunderbolts. Yeah. You could do Thunderbolts, too.
I love the idea of Bucky is the Rick Flag version of Suicide Squad to Thunderbolts. I would love that because we didn't talk about it. We probably won't talk about it a lot. Like, I did not care about Bucky. He didn't really have much to chew on to.
I 100% agree. I feel bad for the actors because I feel like Sebastian Stan kind of gave it his all with what he was given, but he just wasn't given much, you know? But you can also see comparisons in how much people are given. Like he wasn't given much. He was still likable, right? John was given a decent amount, but Wyatt Russell, whatever he was given, he made shit into gold no matter what he did. That's one thing that accomplished. Not only am I super excited for US Agent to continue and anything he's in, I will be the first in line, but at the same time also Wyatt Russell, I'm such a fan now, you know? I want to rewatch the Planet of the Apes movies and like watch his discography and stuff because like I love his dad. I love Kurt Russell. He's like one of my favorite actors of all time. So now Wyatt has gained my trust. Before I was always a little bit like I don't know how great he is because I didn't love him the first time I saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That's the one that he's in, right, Dawn?
I couldn't tell you. It's not the first one.
It's the second one. I've only seen the second one. I saw the first one on an airplane, so I don't really count that.
You should go and rewatch those or watch those movies because they are really, really good.
Yeah.
That trilogy is really good.
And I think I'd like it now because Wyatt.
Totally.
But then there's the third example of not being given anything to work with. You have Sharon, right? I feel terrible for the actress because she's never given anything. But at the same time, like, her performance is always so flat, you know? Like, you can be given nothing, and, like, your job as an actor is to pump some life into the character, right? Mm-hmm. But she just, I don't know, she just doesn't seem to care enough to, like, actually put a personality into Sharon. And they don't write her a character, so it's just, like, the worst mix-up. That was one of the worst reveals I've ever seen in the MCU. Like, everyone hates the Iron Man 3 reveal with the Mandarin. I liked that above and beyond so much better than Sharon in this. I hated it because it was such stupid writing. I was insulted, you know?
Oh my God.
I was watching it and like she shoots a teenager, spoilers, right? We're well past that point at this point, right? But at the same time, like she shoots Carly and like kills her. And like, yeah, Carly's this like revolutionary person, but like we've just found out that Sharon's the power broker. And she kills a teenager in front of Bucky. And then one scene later, they're like, oh, hey, you want to grab a beer after this? Like they're all kind of buddy-buddy. And it's like, did you not just see her shoot a teenager? And we've established that she's like this awful criminal at this point. And so her being the power broker was even, it didn't work as a reveal. It was like, I paused it. I was watching it with my roommate Spencer. And I paused it. And I turned to him. And I was like, no fucking way, like totally sarcastically, right? Because it's just idiocy. And then really fast, right? Because we will get back to that, but I want to go off on Baron Zemo for a second too.
Because
people like Baron Zemo, but they like him for the same reason they hate a lot of Marvel antagonists in the movies. Because early on, anyway, before Phase 3, Marvel always had the complaint that their villains were one note and they had no real motivations and stuff, right? And that's what they did with Baron Zemo in this. Like, everyone kind of liked him because he was, like, fun and flirty in that one episode. But there's nothing to build to that character. It's like, all of a sudden he's forgotten about his dead wife and kids. And he's, like, the chancellor or whatever. He's a duke, whatever makes him, like, super rich. He has this butler who's like, he flies around private jets. They set up the mask like he's like, oh, man, my business isn't done yet. And he wears it for 30 seconds and shoots some guys in a warehouse and then takes it off and never puts it on again. You know?
Well, like, they turned him into a comic book character at the very end. Where before, like, I was really into Civil War is one of my favorite MCU movies. And I think a lot of people would say that he's the worst part of Civil War, like taking out just have the heroes fight. You don't need anybody manipulating him. But it really played for me. And that Baron Zemo coming back was one of my like most anticipated things in Falcon Winter Soldier. And yeah, they just turned him into a cartoon character. They turned him into a comic book character. Now he's just like generic, like you said, flirty bad guy. that they can plug and play in any future movies, which is what it is. But I see what you're saying. I just have bigger complaints than this one. Like, it was that one didn't ruin it for me.
Like,
and even the Sharon, by the way.
I saw a theory. I mean, this is the worst part of Marvel or like any of these things. This is the worst part of having your episodes up every week is that Twitter will come up with better ideas than the writers.
Yeah,
will, right.
100%.
Shout out to Preston Moore on this one because I didn't see this take anywhere else, and I thought it was a really great fan theory that like they should have done this. My God, they should have done this. Look at his mask.
Yeah.
If he created that mask to instill fear into people and to look like the most scary thing they can imagine, it's Thanos,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
And if he based that mask off of Thanos to instill fear in people, that could have worked so great. Or why did they even pick up Zemo? You know, they're like, oh, we need you as a consultant. And then he really doesn't help them. And then they just give him to the Dormilaje, right? Dormilaje?
Yeah, something like that.
It was just
see that.
It felt inconsistent, I guess.
It was inconsistent because they're trying to do something new, I guess, right? Like they're pushing smaller characters forward or changing ones. It's crazy to me that I am so invested in at least Falcon / Captain America right now, and I'm so invested in Wanda right now, where before, like, I would forget about them in the other movies. Where now it's like I'm so into their stuff. And I remember thinking after Endgame, like, what could they possibly do to make me care? And then I really didn't love Far From Home. So, is that the one that came out second? Spider-Man 2?
Yeah.
So I've loved the Marvel TV shows ever since. But anyways, the thing about Sharon was the justification for her character, I guess, as you know, was after the blip, after the events of everything in the MCU so far, she just got swept under the rug and nobody asked if she was okay or offered her help or anything.
Well, do you know why she got arrested? Because they started out interesting. And also, but you can also look at when she first shows up and they're on a random street of a random city, right? And they're just like, they're like being chased by some bad guys. And there's like a sniper. And they're like, oh man, who's the sniper? And she's like, oh, hey guys, it's me. You just happened to run past my apartment and I had a sniper rifle. So I shot these guys who were chasing you. I'm a bad guy now. I'm edgy.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's bad writing. That is just bad writing. There's way too many coincidences there, you know? And that comes, you can't have be like an MCU writer. I do believe the writers are good because so many scenes in this are great. But that comes to me as something where they're like, oh man, we have a contract with this actress who plays Agent 13 and we've never known what to do with her. Let's just find an excuse to throw her into the script. And it's just like sloppy last minute stuff. That's what it felt like.
Right.
Unless maybe we're totally wrong about the rewrites and maybe like it sucked and then they rewrote it and it became actually good. And the stuff we're seeing that's bad is actually the old script and the new script is better. Who knows? A question I have though, right? Overall, right? I'll get back to that in a second. But overall, sure. Like, would you sit down for a day and like binge watch all of WandaVision?
I would sooner do WandaVision than this one.
Than Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah, it's just lighter. It was more fun to watch.
But I thought you liked this better. I thought you liked Falcon Winter Soldier better though.
No, I think that the moments that hit the standout moments were better for me in Falcon Winter Soldier versus WandaVision. But as a whole, like as the series and as an installment in the MCU, I think I did like WandaVision more. And that might just be my viewing experiences because with WandaVision, I was like watching them all with Dee Dee, and it was like the first Marvel in like the longest time. You know, it was just like really exciting. Where Falcon Winter Soldier came out, and like the first two episodes, I was just like confused / didn't care because the Flag Smashers were such a wash. And then Falcon and Winter Soldier as characters, I wasn't like ready to like latch onto yet. And then Zemo was weird, so it took longer for me to get invested. And when it did, those high watermark moments for me, I'm gonna remember more than like the mystery and like fun moments of WandaVision. But still, if I was to go back and rewatch one right now, I think it would just be WandaVision. Because it was more fun to me.
That's fascinating, because I disagree. For me, I actively want to. I want to go back and rewatch all of Falcon and Winter Soldier in one go.
Wow.
Because watching it episode to episode, week to week, it just seemed so inconsistent. But maybe it was just the headspace I was in at the time every week, you know? So it just seemed like a different show to me. Because I was watching it, like, seriously, you know? Because I love this shit. I take it, like, super seriously. But I feel like I kind of got everything I need to get out of WandaVision in the first go.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Versus with Falcon and Winter Soldier, I feel like there's so many complexities in there that I don't entirely understand. And like in some cases I only understood on the second viewing. Like the Flag Smasher's whole goal, which could have been so fucking cool. Like I love, you know me, like I'm an anti-nationalist. I think that shit is so stupid. Right? And so I was so fucking excited when they were like, oh, the Flag Smasher are going to be anti-nationalist. And I was like, fuck yeah, they're going for this anti-US military stance. And they're going to, by the end of the show, Falcon and Winter Soldier are going to be fighting on the side of the Flag Smashers. Right? Mm-hmm. Because they're going to realize that these people have been dislocated following the blip and that they're the ones who are being wronged. And so they're going to fight on their side. But instead they take a neutral stance. And there's that whole monologue at the end with Sam, which is brilliant. And it's got a really good take. Yeah. But I feel bad for that actress too, again, because she does her best. She is like a pretty good actress through the whole thing, and like she's, for how young she is and stuff, you know, she's really stepping up to the bar and like able to act there with Mackie and with Sebastian Stan and with Wyatt Russell too, you know, which is totally. he's like a whole different league to me basically now. But but she's doing great. But again, it's like rewrites, you know, it's like that character could have been great. Yeah. There was so much potential.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I agree. There was a lot of potential. Da, 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 da. But just do it with Zemo. Like, I already had so much built up equity with Zemo where I wanted more out of his character and I was excited and looking forward to it. I love Preston Moore's like rumor mill thing. And then it was just like this random chick. And then I get that they all have superhero syndrome or serum. Super soldier serum.
Yeah.
But just physically looking at it, it was just like people punching in like a dimly lit street, and I did not know what they were doing. And it was just like,
imagine if it all could have been like episode 2, where they're fighting the Flag Smashers on top of the trucks, and then a helicopter comes in and John Walker shows up, and he's like, how's it going, guys? And he like throws the shield, and like they're just fighting over the shield, and Bucky catches it for a second, and he's literally holding, that's what happens, dude. That's what happens in episode 2, but I wish the whole thing was like that. Where they're on top of the trucks, John swings in, right? And he's throwing the shield around, he's like, how's it going, fellas? And then Bucky catches the shield for a second, and he's holding the shield in his hands, and then John runs up super casually, not knowing any of the context, and is like, thanks for holding that, man, and goes back, and then pulls a fucking gun. Captain America pulls a gun, and is just flippantly shooting people, right? And it's like, that was the moment following the marching band bit in the locker room scene and stuff, right? I was so fucking in on episode 2. Episode 2 Same. Got me so hard, right? But then they just, it just went... after that, you know, just big old the worst.
Yeah, anyway, get that.
But there's things to be excited about, which is that's
lots
the cool
of
thing.
Things to be excited about. Oh
yeah,
look at that.
There's Black Widow, Shang-Chi, and those are just like
all within like the next couple months, bro. Yeah,
and Marvel What If too, that's coming pretty soon as well, and that's gonna be so
excited
cool.
For Marvel What If.
Yeah,
you know, that was one of my most like anticipated things when they had that big pressure to announce like all their upcoming plans.
And Chadwick's gonna be in it. He already did all his voice acting for it. So
yeah,
like
that's gonna be great.
That's gonna be so cool. Shang-Chi also, just quick shout out to that, because you know I'm like super excited for that movie. I am so fucking jazzed for that movie. I'm rereading the comic books too, and like, you know, Shang-Chi, Bruce Lee. He literally is like, no, he's literally like, it's the Stan Lee thing where like Wade Wilson, Slade Wilson, you know, where they're just kind of making rhymy names, right?
Yeah.
And Stan Lee based him off of Bruce Lee, like fully knowing that. And then I think in the 90s, he was even trying to greenlit a TV series starring Bruce Lee's son, Shang-Chi, right?
Wow.
So like it is literally Bruce Lee. And so, God, I hope this movie is good. Because then that'll bring back Kung Fu cinema. And the bad guy in it, Razor Fist, I think is his name, He's got like two like sword arms basically, and he's played by the bad guy from Creed 2. He's played by Victor Drago, that like really huge guy. The way that Victor Drago, that actor, was first discovered, he was like an underground boxer and slash actor, I think, in like small projects, and like from one of the like Balk region, I think is what they call it, where it's like Ukraine and Russia. I don't want to say the wrong country, but he's from that region. And the way they found him is they found a viral online video of him bench pressing two gigantic dogs. That's how they found this guy. And he's like in Hollywood and is like playing like big ass Russian guy, because he is big ass Russian guy basically. And that's what he's going to be in this movie. And it's like, I'm so fucking jazzed.
Yeah, that'll be exciting. That'll be
And John, and Dark Avengers, Dark Avengers, Thunderbolts, also Young Avengers is being set up in all these shows so far. Because you got the kid, you got Billy and Wanda and Vision's kids. I can't remember their names. Wiccan and somebody, I can't remember the Speedster's name, right? But they're both Young Avengers, right? Mm-hmm. Elijah, is it McClane? It's I can't remember his name, but Isaiah's son. He's kind of more prominently in the last episode, and he says something to Captain America where he's, or to Sam, and he's like, where are we going, you know? And he's like old enough that like in like 2 years, yeah, he's gonna be perfectly primed to be Young Avenger, and he's gonna play Patriot, who, if you know who that is in the comics, that's like the second Bucky, so he's probably gonna be Sam's sidekick at some point. I'd like to think maybe in Cap 4, that'd be really cool, but there's so much cool shit. There's so much cool shit in the pipeline. So, irregardless of how well executed the show is, the ideas are sick. And so, going forward, that's what's going to translate. You know?
Definitely looking forward to it. Looking forward to it all. All of them have, like, things specifically that I'm looking forward to. Honestly, other than Shang-Chi. But your enthusiasm will push me through, I'm sure.
I will make you watch all the Bruce Lee movies before Shang-Chi comes out. To give you the full context of how sick that movie's gonna be.
So I'm all caught up.
That's my goal, is to get you to get excited for this movie. Because you will be. Once it's closer to release, you're gonna be at the edge of your seat, because it's a Marvel movie, you know?
Of course.
Also, another thing to note here, I find it really funny. In Phase 3, remember there was the joke that every single Marvel poster looked exactly the same? They were all like Thor Ragnarok and Infinity War. They were all like the person with like all the other smaller people around them. Mm-hmm. They're doing the same shit now. Look at Black Widow and look at Shang-Chi, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just your main character full body in a position where their arms are outstretched, right? And there's shapes behind them, and it's red. It's the same poster. It's like ridiculous. Anyway. The other thing I wanted to bring up is, at this point in the process, we're multiple months in, we've had Star Wars projects, we've had Marvel projects, we've had Pixar releases, we've had Disney releases, we've had a streaming revenue model where it's like, some stuff is free, some stuff you have to pay $30 for. What do you think of Disney Plus so far?
That's a great topic. I think that I don't click on it. If I'm sitting down and I don't know what I'm going to watch, I'm just going to scroll and click on something. I'm not going to Disney Plus. But with that being said, like, all of the current things that I'm watching are there. I like was there for the premiere and like every episode of all the Marvel shows, Mandalorian. If and when there's a Soul, I watched Soul the opening day came out. With that being said, I'm not going to pay for any premium access. I'm not going to do any of that. I really don't like that model. If anything, make Disney Plus subscription like $1 more a month or something like that. I see that they're bombing. And then I just click over to HBO Max and I'm watching all the new shows or all the new movies for free. So that's my gripe with them. But I mean, beyond that, the IP there's just too much. So I'm always going to be going back to it. But that article you sent the other day about Luca, I understand. For context, it was actually, you should explain the context of that article.
I mean, basically it's like there's a few levels to it where it's a lot of it's interpretation and it's a lot of rumors and speculation and stuff, but also the idea of Disney being an asshole is not really that strange of a concept, so I tend to kind of believe this kind of thing. But the rumor goes that, like, the deal with Pixar and Disney is kind of more indicative of the Pixar executives and the Disney executives making a decision between the two of them, whereas the animators and the Pixar audience, as a filmmaker, you want to be able to see your product on screen, and you want it to have kind of the traditional movie experience, or at least, like, charge for it, show some sort of value in the work they put in. But the model of kind of giving, like, paying subscription services for Disney movies and then giving the Pixar ones away, first of all, that's flawed. But then if you also look at the two most recent Pixar releases, they're really kind of, they're like we're saying about Falcon Winter Soldier to an extent, right? That it's a beautiful time. It's a time of diversity now, you know? And Pixar is very much doing that. Soul is very much a black movie, you know? It's speaking to those themes in our culture, our society. And the main character is a black man, which is like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, that would be kind of unheard of, right?
Yeah.
And Luca, the same thing. I mean, we haven't seen it yet, but it takes place in Spain, you know? And it's got characters who are people of color. Is it Spain? I'm not sure where it is. I'm going to take
I think
back.
It might be Italy, but regardless, it's people of color. It's not the norm.
Yeah, it's not what it was 10 years ago anyway, right? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a really exciting thing when they announced all these movies at, I think it was like a Comic-Con or D23 or something like that. And I remember seeing all these tweets of people like, I'm so happy that Pixar is doing some representation now, right? They're kind of showing this stuff. And it is kind of disheartening to see that with the excuse of the pandemic, they're like, here, you can have these ones for free. Soul was okay because it was Christmas, you know, and they kind of gave it for Christmas Day, and it was like sort of advertised that way, like, here's a gift to you from us, right? But Luca, I think you should charge for none of them, but at the same time, if you are going to charge for some of them, it does create a weird dynamic where some projects are considered more important than others, and that's kind of the flaw of it, because there's people putting their heart and soul into this stuff, you know? Their heart and soul into this. but like, and it just sucks that some of it's being discounted, I guess. But anyway, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I get it, but also, if anything, people are watching this more than watching the other stuff because it's included and free. But I get the theater experience situation. You can't, or at least the majority can't go watch this movie like in a traditional setting and like make a night of it and like really appreciate these movies, which Soul was great, Onward was great, and I'm sure Luca will be great. But with that being said, everybody's in the same situation. Everybody making movies.
I will say, like, though, that with Raya, right? With Raya and the Last Dragon, that did get a theatrical run. And it also had the paid model. Versus for Luca, there's no theatrical run planned. They just said we're gonna release
that's on Disney Plus.
So that's a big
then
part
no
of it.
One's gonna no one saw Raya then. Like I don't know if I know anyone who saw Raya, but everyone saw Soul, you know.
Yeah, that could be the case.
I get that it feels, or if I'm like somebody who worked on that movie, it feels like the powers that be in Disney's, like, you know, puppet fingers are like, they don't really care about their stuff because it's a different studio and they're going to push the other things more so. But with that being said, just physically, it's more readily available than the other things. Like, they're either behind a paywall or you need to go to a movie theater during a pandemic where you could just watch these other things, like, right included.
Yeah. I guess the interesting question, though, is, like, right now they have the pandemic to hide behind, right?
Mm-hmm.
When that's
what's
over,
gonna happen after?
Yeah, what's going to happen next, you know? But we won't know that till it happens, I guess.
Right. Well, we'll have to see. I'm sure Disney wants to make the most money as possible, so I'm sure they'll be back in theaters, you know? Pixar movies are, like, some of, like, usually top 10, top 5, like, highest grossing movies of the year. So it'll be back, I'm sure.
Yeah.
At least so. That's how I figure.
Let's talk about Speed Racer.
Speed Racer was so good. I watched it mostly. I watched, like, I would say 80% of it last night, but that was like peak my Moderna fever dream. So I just turned it off and got back to it this morning. And I was thinking about what I was going to talk to you about it and talk about on Letterboxd. Not that it matters, but I was going to say, I wish that this movie was made now with modern technology for the VFX and everything. And I just wish that they cut everything that had to do with the little brother and the money. But by the end, after watching the whole movie, like, it's okay, dude. Like, it's just like that. That's what it is. Like, it's weird. It doesn't look perfect, but like the story was just so like, I don't know what the word, just not even inspiring, because like, obviously I'm not going to go outside and want to be a race car driver now, but it's just like such a lighthearted and just like uppity story. And yeah, like every time it cut to the stupid monkey, like I'd kind of groan, but like, it's kind of cute. It was just like kind of cute.
I loved the monkey. I had no problem with the monkey. Because wow. it's from the show, you know? It's all based on this really classic show. So it's like, mm-hmm. it's a live action cartoon, you know? And yeah, it's a kids movie. That's what the monkey is there for, you know?
Yeah.
We're there for like the sick visuals and for like thinking about it too much.
Yeah, it was thinking about it too much. Well, I did really enjoy it.
But here's the thing, is that's the right way to watch it, because mm-hmm. it's the same directors as The Matrix, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen The Matrix?
Of course, I haven't seen any of the sequels, but I have seen the original, like,
we're we're on the same page. I haven't seen any of the sequels either, right? But if you look at the two who made it, right, the Wachowskis, as they're now mm-hmm. called, right? At the time of making The Matrix, right, they were the Wachowski brothers. But mm-hmm. now they're both either, I think they're both trans.
I'm like 90%.
And they're now the Wachowski sisters, right? And if you look at The Matrix, right? Mm. That's an extremely deep movie on so many levels, right? Because it's this whole idea of society's an illusion, right? And it's just this thing that kind of keeps people conforming, and Neo's the character to break out of it, which in a way can also be interpreted as gender conformity, right? On the part of the Wachowskis mm-hmm. who felt like they were in a world that wouldn't accept them for who they were. And so they made a movie that's kind of, it has all the blockbuster appeal and it has all the cool shit happening, but there's also this thematic through line that has a really deep message to it. Now, with that context, that's the kind of filmmaker they are, right? And this is not an original thought. I read this online. I'm going to shout out Stephen Michaels of Chapman University, because I think I saw it in his review, and I don't think it was his idea either. I think he read about it, but he mentioned it, and that kind of brought it up to my attention, and I was like, it changed the movie entirely for me, right? So you said you watched the last 20 minutes this morning, right?
Yeah, like right before we got on this call. Wait, so you're saying that there's a way to view Speed Racer through the like trans lens?
No, not
as well as Matrix.
Not the trans lens, but it does have a deeper meaning. And when I explain it to you, it knocked my socks off, and I think it'll knock your socks off too, right?
Okay, cool. I have no idea what you're about to talk about.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, right? It's because it's so cool. Okay, so think about the last 20 minutes, right? So basically, spoiler alert for Speed Racer. If you have not seen Speed Racer, you should absolutely watch this movie. I ordered the Blu-ray immediately after watching it because I love it.
It's on Tubi for free. TUBI. Yes. It's like one of those random streaming services. It's on there for free.
Yeah. Great movie. But in the last few minutes of the movie, right? So you find out through the whole movie, the racer family, which by the way, love that the main character's name is just Speed Racer, and his family's last name are all the racers.
So cool.
And you got Rex Racer, which if you really think about it, you got Racer X, Rex Racer.
Of course.
The reveal,
of course.
Right?
Dude, I was so into that plot line because I was on Speed Racer's team, like, oh, that's definitely his brother. Like, that's crazy. And then he wasn't, and I'm like, oh fuck, wait a minute, this is crazy. And then he was in the end, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was all
facial reconstruction surgery.
So funny. Dude, that has to be very anime, huh?
It's but it's just so cool. It is very anime, but it's so fucking cool. But anyway, that's not what the crazy thing is. So you find out from the villain, the racer family has loved racing their whole life, and it's something that's defined their family. It's the thing they all share. It's the thing they all live for, right? And then the main character finds out that every single race of the past 50 years has been bought and sold, right? They've all been set up, and they've all been corporatized, and it's not at all the spirit of racing like they thought it was, right? So Speed Racer, the final race, everything is already set up. Everybody knows what position they're going to do. It's more like theater, right? It's more like theater than an actual race because it's all bought. But through a technicality, Speed Racer manages to get his car in there. And it's kind of like Susan Sarandon says earlier in the movie, it's like he's an artist behind the wheel, right? And when he's driving, sometimes she's like, sometimes when you're driving, I'm like, this might be your masterpiece, right? And at the very end, like, that's his masterpiece, right? And even though everything is bought and sold and everything is put against him, he's able to win that race through his passion for what racing really is, right? Now, if you think about it, the Wachowskis wrote this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're obviously very, like, alternative people, you know? And they're very, with the Matrix and stuff, right? They don't conform to society. They don't believe in conforming to society, that kind of thing, right? So Speed Racer and that whole racing being bought and sold is an analogy for the Wachowskis' relationship with Hollywood. Because they grew up loving movies their entire life with all of their soul. And it's a feeling a lot of us get when we go to film school, right? That you go your whole life thinking that there's movie magic. And then you find out when you get there that, no, none of these movies are kind of passion projects. A lot of them are just bought and sold, right? It's just the executives control everything. And the artistry is something that has to be fought for rather than being the central point, which is how it should be, right? And so the Wachowskis are kind of like Speed Racer entering the race as the dark horse contender who's not bought and sold, who has their own ideas and wants to get their message out there. And they make their masterpiece. They make like the Matrix or whatever that would be, right? But they're doing their own thing and they're managing to trailblaze in a seemingly hopeless industry, you know?
Right.
Isn't that cool? I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, that's really fun. That's a really cool way to look at it. I mean, you know, I didn't put specifically the film lens on it, but I feel like it kind of works with anything. It was kind of about growing up, right, and becoming a man, like making your, like picking and choosing the stances that you're gonna like fight for and die on. And I was in it, dude. Like, I'm sure it was rated PG, and it's obviously a kids' movie, but like, it's a pretty interesting plot. It could very well have just been like cool visuals and like a race car movie, I guess. But it was pretty cool, the stuff about like the stocks and like the companies going back and forth and the insider trading. Like, I was just as invested in that as I would be in like anything else. And then on top of it, there were like the craziest action racing sequences. I loved the performance by the main dude. I don't even know who that is, but I really did like him.
Yeah, he's he went up against some interesting people for the people who didn't get cast as Speed Racer is fascinating. I'll tell you about that in a second because I looked up the history of it too, and its history is also so fascinating. But really fast, right? Because you were saying about the CGI and the effects and stuff, and like how, what a remaster would look like and stuff, right? Which will never happen.
That'd be so cool.
But it would never happen because it was a huge flop, which I'll tell you about later too. But if you look at this picture in front of us, right, that's kind of a perfect example of like what the movie looks like visually. It's for people who can't see the visual in front of us. It's like a very shiny car. Speed Racer's car is very shiny. Everything looks like it's made of plastic, right?
Yeah.
And that's
actually at the very end of the movie, like when his car like kind of skids to a like awkward ish looking stop at the finish line, he's won and everything. I don't know if it was the Moderna like running through my system, but I actually thought it was going to be like a cutaway and it was a little toy car that he was playing with like as a kid, and like this was his imagination or something, but then ended up being real. But like in that moment and in many others, it looked very plasticky for sure.
And but I think that's kind of the point, because I think moments like when he goes kind of up in the air and his wheel breaks, right, and the wheel reforms on the tire tread in midair, right, and I was super high when I was watching this, but I thought that was the coolest shit I'd ever seen in my life, right? I was so into it. But it wouldn't, if the cars looked realistic and if everything didn't look so plastic and like Hot Wheels, right, then the immersion effect of it wouldn't have logically believed in that stuff as much.
Yeah,
because it looked so fake and plasticky and stuff, your brain kind of goes, okay, like that's what it is. And also, and at the same time, like I see something in CGI, in old CGI now, right? In like the 2000s era, / 90s era, right? In the same way that we watch like schlocky horror movies from the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have these old dated effects and stuff, right? But there's something kind of charming about that because it's nostalgic. And we're getting to the point now where that mid-2000s CGI turn, that for me anyway, is becoming nostalgic now. Where, like, Pirates of the Caribbean, even though those special effects are super old, they're done in a way where they're not really going to be dated that bad, you know?
Well, those are really good, dude. Like, those have some really incredible VFX.
But it's the way they shortcut it that makes it work, though, you know? It's the method. It's the method of that CGI, because there's people, there's, like, teens of thousands, hundreds. I mean, I don't know anything about it, but let's say tens, hundreds, or thousands of people. I don't know how big the CGI teams are, right? But there's so many people working on this, and there's got to be so much thought put into every single microsecond on that screen, right?
Of course.
And some of it ages better than others, and there's a reason for that, you know? Because some of it, I feel like the movies that are really good are the ones that are, they're designed with the thought that somebody's going to watch this in 20 years, and all of this technology is going to look super old, but it's a product of its time, you know? Mm-hmm. And that definitely adds something to it, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah. But
I definitely
anyway,
think so.
Do you want to hear about the history of this movie? Because it's insane.
Yeah, dude, please.
Okay, so it was originally going to be made in 1992. That's when they announced it. And Speed Racer was going to be played by young Johnny Depp.
Oh, fuck.
That was the original idea, right? And I'm gonna pull up the Wikipedia page while I'm talking to help me out, because I don't remember all of it off the top of my head. But Johnny Depp basically he said he wasn't ready to film immediately, and so they held off shooting, and the script was kind of going everywhere. So the guy who was originally going to direct it said no thanks. He passed as well. So then it was in limbo for a bit, and then they gave it to like a music video director for a little while too. And that didn't work. Okay, do you know who Henry Rollins is?
No, honestly. Well, maybe I know the name, but I don't know who that is.
So there's a very famous punk band called Black Flag, right? Where their biggest songs like Rise Above, we're gonna rise above. It's like super like hard punk, right? And in the original casting, that lead singer of that punk band was gonna play Racer X. Right? Johnny Depp was going to play Speed Racer, which is already sick. But then, like, stuff shifted around. It almost didn't get made. I think they hired people whose names I don't recognize. I think they did, like, a music video director for a little bit. And then Alfonso Cuarón, who's a very famous director recently, and I'm going to fail my film cred here if anyone from Dodge College is watching this. What did he direct again?
Itumama Tambien.
Oh yeah, he was
Harry Potter 3 and Realma. I can name off the top of my head.
So he almost directed Speed Racer also, right? Which is crazy, right?
And I would have loved that.
Yeah, he left, right? And for another thing, when they were, so the plot was all over the place. They didn't know how to adapt an anime to American screens. So it's worth noting as well that they hired a bunch of screenwriters to write different scripts for it. And there's a script that there's a J.J. Abrams written Speed Racer out there somewhere, right?
Wow.
Which is crazy. But now it gets even crazier, right? Because this project almost died, right? But this is my favorite part of this. Because if you know the context of me and the stuff we've been into over quarantine and stuff in my household, this is crazy. I'm going to read it directly off the Wikipedia page. In June 2004, Vince Vaughn spearheaded a revival of the project by presenting a take for the film that would develop the characters more strongly. Vaughn was cast as Racer X and was also attached to the project as an executive producer. With production never becoming active, Vaughn was eventually detached from the project.
Wow.
Crazy!
That would have been sick.
That was crazy! And then the Wachowskis got it, and they'd been, you know, they basically made it like The Matrix. Like that first classroom scene where he's sitting in the chair and like everything around him morphs, and it literally, that's what acid looks like. I'll tell you right now that that's exactly what it looks like. Just the colors blending around. He really believes he's in the race car. And from that moment, I knew I was going to be watching something so special. But like, God, I loved it. I just, it brought back that thing that like, too early for that image. It brought back that thing that like, I guess to bring it to a personal level for a second, right? And I put this in my review for Speed Racer, which was a really fucking long review on Letterboxd, right? But, and there's a lot of different themes of it tackled and stuff, but the part I'm going to focus on is that, like, when I was coming into film school, the thing that always bothers me in movies, and I'm going to use like Kong versus Godzilla as an example, which I know is a controversial one because you like that movie a lot, right?
Yeah, it's controversial.
But when I was watching that, I was like, I don't give a single shit about the humans, right? I could not care less because you're showing me Millie Bobby Brown in like a basement doing some shit, and then you're cutting to like gigantic beings fighting each other, and then we go back to Millie Bobby Brown in the scope, and it's like, why are this is the scale is just jumping way too much back and forth, right? And I'm like, why can't we just have gorilla versus lizard movie and cut all the Hollywood bullshit and just make the movie that audiences want from the trailer? That's what they're coming in to watch. And speed, and I came in thinking that, not that I was revolutionary, but like that, but like that movie didn't exist basically, right? That movie had never existed, right? And then I sit down and watch this movie and I was like, wow, they beat me to it by at least 10 years, you know?
That's
like it's exactly what I wanted, but the also disheartening thing about it is it did awful at the box office. It had a budget of like 120 something million and I think it made 96 million, right? Which like
so
pretty bad. But the other interesting fact about it, another interesting tidbit, right? You know what? So the same weekend it came out, there's another movie that came out that absolutely destroyed it at the box office. You know what that movie is?
No idea.
The original Iron Man.
Oh, wow, bro.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
So the birth of the MCU started with the death of Speed Racer.
That's great. Bummer that it didn't take off. Dude, there's got to be like a comic or a video game or something to like continue that story. I just really liked it. It just like really caught my imagination.
Well, there's the whole TV show, you know?
Yeah.
The TV show's free on Prime Video.
Really?
And yeah. I haven't watched any of it yet, but I want to. That's definitely on my list. Hmm. And like there's comics. It's based off a comic, which became a TV show, which became the movie. But the movie itself, like it just didn't do well. But it should have. But that's okay.
Yeah.
John Goodman made a ninja joke, which is great.
He's like, I really like John Goodman in this movie.
Ninjas, more like ninjas. And there's that shot. There's that shot where it zooms in on his like world championship wrestling reign, and you're like, oh my god. And later in an action sequence, he has two dudes in a headlock and does like a move Dwayne The Rock Johnson would do, and it's like really this. God. I loved it. I love this movie so much.
Same, bro.
Anyway, so what just flashed on the screen? Unfortunately, the pirates have boarded us yet again this week. Yeah. They've intercepted our broadcast, and we gotta flee the ship. Wow. So any final words, Jake, before we log off?
Exactly. Really looking forward to Trader Sam's.
Yeah, fuck yeah. And I'm going to make the suggestion, too, that we get high one day and watch all of Falcon Winter Soldier.
Wow.
Because that'd be fun.
We can keep it on the docket.
Then we'll have like a certified take on it as opposed to watching it in little bits and pieces and being scatterbrained.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so thank you so much for tuning in, anyone, if you are tuning in. It's been real. We got to go. We're being boarded. But yeah, we're gonna go. Walk the plank. Oh, wait, did I? No, I need to stop recording.